And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are now tuned in to The Pastor Spot, a radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. My name's Terry Tackett, and I will turn it over now to the host of the show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Pastor.
Hello, Terry. Hey, you know what? It is a beautiful Tuesday evening. We could get snow in again this weekend, but I'm going to tell you what to do if you get snowed in this weekend. You know, I'm always asking you to come to church, but you could get snowed in. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to go to wwgh.com, click on Show Archives, and then you can scroll all the way down, and all the shows are on there. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have the Pastor Spot on there. Boy, I bet there's about 30 or 40 shows on there
easily.
Now. And then on Over the Fence with Scott and Steve on Friday, you know, where they can click on that, and all those shows are there. You can do a marathon.
You're probably at 10 or 12 on that show.
Oh yeah, and you guys can do a marathon on those shows. Just hit on them and listen to them.
Yeah.
And you know, they're every now and then I've got like to go back and listen to them and see what we talked about and see how it went across. But you know, it's so easy to do, so
sure.
Just do that.
Yeah.
And another thing is, if you'd like to call in tonight, we're at 740-383-9944, and that's 383-WGH. So please call in if you'd like to talk tonight. We ask you to keep it plain, simple, and clean. But this is Pastor Steve Whitaker. I am the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. We are at 209 East Water Street. Our phone number is 740-494-2222. Our web address is prospectccf.com. We would love to have you come to church. If you want to contact us, please do. We'll give you all the information you need. Have a lot of neat programs. We've got Team Kid tonight. We're kicking it back off. We haven't had Team Kid since Christmas, which given kids a chance to get back to school. But Team Kid is from age 3 through 5th grade. And then I have pizza with Pastor tonight at Sporty's Pizza in Prospect. And the kids will sit around and we'll just toss subjects around and I give them a chance to talk. And it's a real nice time to get together. But hey, it's great to be on the air tonight. And let's see what we can talk about tonight.
Say, what's on the pastor's mind tonight?
What is on the pastor's mind? Well, some people would tell you there's nothing there. They can see through from ear to ear. A lot of things are on the pastor's mind. I want positive things to be on the pastor's mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing that I've been kind of discussing a little bit today.
Well, now since we're getting over the holidays and stuff, I mean, we gotta think positively.
Think positive, get ahead, and get back in the group.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been encouraging people over the last few weeks that two areas I'd like to focus on this year that are kind of important to me and I think should be important to you and certainly are important to God is that, one, we get ourselves back in church. It's a solid foundation for our young people, for you. It's a chance for you to have that relationship with God and experience His love and presence in your life. And another thing is, you know, work on getting our finances in order. You know, finances are the biggest problem one of the key factors in a lot of divorce and family struggles. And, you know, just working on that steady way to get back where you need to be. Cut up those credit cards, man. You might want to keep one if you need one for an emergency. But other than that, you know, cap out a small one and let it sit there so you can't keep using it.
Right.
But then again, you have to pay it down if you're going to use it.
Right.
So,
but,
you know, just try to do those things. Those are just a few things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was talking about something. We've got a real shift in society in the last decade. Nah, I won't say decade. I'd say the last generation, maybe generation and a half. And for years in our country, things were things didn't change a lot. They didn't change a lot in the world, actually. You had your basic family structure, and people had things they did and habits they did. And with modern technology, things have so changed so rapidly. And with the job market and the incomes and all the things that drive everything out there. And it's real interesting because I was talking to an older couple, the other night, and older than I am, so you know they're old. And anyway, we were talking about how much it has changed and how our kids view things differently, completely differently. There's been a real paradigm shift between how we view and how they view many things. And one of them is...
I was going to ask you, though, Pastor, real quick, just before you say this answer, how are they adapting, like these older people? Are they adapting now, or are they just kind of... I mean, have they adapted to the new?
To a point, but I think a lot of them are just.
I don't know if adapt. I guess adapt is the word.
Adapt is a way, learning, following. It just depends on the person. You know, anytime in society, you're going
to
have people
that
naturally.
This is probably dumb to say, but do they want to adapt? I mean,
no.
Okay.
I'll tell you that point.
Be honestly, yeah.
No,
yeah.
No.
Okay.
But as far as picking up on technology, sure they are.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Nathan.
Some elderly people are far better on social or
sure.
Not technology than
okay.
Even I am.
Yeah,
but
good way to, yeah.
Some of the things that are a struggle are this, just the way we look at things.
Mm.
My parents growing up, their major focus was on raising their children
sure.
as the best they saw fit.
Absolutely.
And taking care of their needs, both physically and every other way okay. that they needed to.
Okay.
But when it came to school, when it came to activities, when it came to athletics,
mm-hmm.
For the most part, now there's exceptions to every rule,
yep.
but for the most part, that was something that was done outside of the home.
Ah.
So therefore, that was something that went on in school, and the activity was great, and your parents may drive you and pick you up or bring you back.
Right.
But there was not this great demand for parents to plug into and grandparents to plug into every activity the young people did. Give you a good example.
Now it's almost like they want you at every, you know what I'm
saying? Or you're in trouble.
Yeah,
you don't care if you're not there.
Right.
And it's interesting because I never doubted my parents' love for me.
Yeah.
But yet, I bet I could count on one hand the sports events that my parents showed up that
sure.
I was in. My dad may have made a baseball game or two in Little League, and maybe my mom with him, and maybe later, once my dad passed away, mom might have made it to a couple things at school. I was in school play once she was there. She
right.
might have watched a soccer game or a football. I don't remember, to
uh-huh.
be honest with you.
Right.
But the bottom line is, it wasn't at the top of their radar.
Right.
Right. What they were focused on is making home life the way it needed to be and that struggle that went on there.
And to give you a structure.
And give you a structure, a basis to be able to go out.
At home. You know,
at home.
Yeah, yeah.
And today, it's so odd that parents, the structure at home seems to be dissipating, and the parents want to follow the kids out into the world
mm-hmm.
and cheer
mm-hmm.
them on and whatever they're doing out there, and we're losing that foundation.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
and but not just that. They expect the parents, their parents, and the grandparents to show up and support too,
absolutely.
If they really care.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
what you'll get. You know, you don't care about my kids, you don't show up.
Right.
But yet, there's not that hands-on the other way as much.
Mm.
Now, understand when I say these things, I'm saying them in a. It's not an absolute, but it's basically what's going on.
Right.
And another thing that's shifted a lot is that. Children always knew there was a day when they might need to help take care of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And today, the attitude is, what are my parents going to do for me? What are they going to leave me? What benefit am I going to have from my parents as they grow older?
Sure.
And I think that shifted a lot. You know, biblically, the Bible says that a child that doesn't take care of their parents and their family is worse than a non-believer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and for that to be in the Bible, that would be really bad, wouldn't
yeah.
it? And it's interesting because, you know, people say, well, wait a minute, you know, back then, though, you got to remember that on the farms and whatnot, the oldest left the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a precedent for leaving, but you have to understand something. That young person that was left the farm, that was probably 50 years old by the time that it was left to them, had worked their tail off on it for the last 40 years or their whole life to be left that. And then they would have little, the Amish call them dotie houses. And if you ever drive out in the country, in the Amish country, you'll see this little strange-looking addition on the side of a house. Sometimes it looks like a little house that's attached to it. And that's where mom and dad move into.
Ah.
And then when they're gone.
So you take their house, in essence.
Yes.
And
then when they're gone,
okay.
your oldest, if they worked on the farm the whole time, will move into your house. Then you move into that house.
Ah.
And they're right there to be taken care of till the time of it. What a wonderful way to take
yeah.
care of family, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And honestly, Terry, we see that still in other parts of the world a lot. But
right.
here, we have gotten so caught up in activities mm-hmm. and places mm-hmm. to go mm-hmm. that we're so busy running and chasing our tails, making sure our kids are competing in everything, that we're not giving them a foundation in which to compete. And many times the sad thing is we're relying on the schools and the teachers mm-hmm. to give them that foundation, and that was never their meaning. Mm-hmm. The schools and the teachers were there literally to teach mm-hmm. educational things outside of the general raising of the child at the home. And today the teachers are trying to deal with this. I hear that teachers have it made today because they only work X amount of months, they make X amount of money, and mm-hmm. I hear that all the time. And I'll be honest with you, teachers, you can argue with me. I know what salaries are out there. You're not paid that badly. However, here, I will qualify it with this. For what you do, you're not paid very well.
Right.
And what I mean by that yeah. is you're not just expected to teach a subject. You're teaching a subject to children that have not been grounded with a foundation to be able to learn many times. Right. They're not nutritionally grounded to where they can learn. They're sleep deprived. There's fighting at home. There's three different, they don't have the same, I mean, the stuff teachers deal with every day. And you don't know how that kid's going to come in or what they dealt with the night before. So different from when I grew up. I think, Terry, you'd know that when you were in school, and you can remember looking back, and I don't know the situation, but I can pretty much guess, there were always some kids in school that came from bad homes.
Absolutely.
And you can remember those kids, maybe one pops to your mind when I say this. Yeah. But the problem today is that a huge amount of kids come from a rough home life.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be kids that look great on the surface, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not the stability that there used to be. Another thing I noticed that's quite interesting to me is that I was watching television, or bouncing in and out of it, walking through the room yesterday, and my wife was there with some of my kids, and some things were off and on. Everything today is a competition instead of a life lesson. How weird is that? I was thinking about this. Now, I'm going to go way back, folks. You're really going to think I'm old. I'm talking about Timmy and Lassie, okay?
Okay.
Remember the Lassie show with Timmy and the dog? Okay. You know, Timmy'd get into trouble, and Lassie would save the day, and someone would come find him, and all those things would happen. Or Timmy would do something wrong, and he'd end up getting corrected somehow. You saw that on My Three Sons. You saw that on Leave It to Beaver. There were life lessons being taught in these shows. And they were usually to bring you back to what was right and the right thing to do. And there was a mom and dad involved, or in My Three Sons, there was Uncle Charlie because mom was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things went on. But today, everything's a competition. I turn on the Food Network, and there's all these little kids competing to be the very best at baking a cake. And they've got to win, and they've got to win, and there's big prizes. And if they don't win, they feel like they're a loser. And there's this total competitive attitude. It's you know, sports went from having fun with sports to being competitive in sports. And what's really sad is the kids that could enjoy sports that are no good at them are pushed out of them now. Because it used to be, if you weren't very good, you had intramural stuff.
Right.
You did the stuff anyway, and you got a chance to do it and experience it. Or you went home and you had the sandlot beside your house, and you're going to play at some point anyway and get out and get exercise. And now if your kids aren't, you know, to a certain level and they're not in travel ball, all of a sudden those kids are being shifted over into another area where maybe, well, come on, buddy, you're kind of, you're in the geek squad, or you see what I mean? This isn't for you.
Yeah.
And it's sad because we're trying to specialize these kids in everything that weren't meant to be specialized. Let them be children, for crying out loud. And, you know, focus the family back at home and what can we do as a family. One of my daughters, I haven't seen her a lot since Christmas. And I thought, you know, first thought is, well, what do we do? She's always here every day, being a bobbing in and out. Well, come to find out what was really going on was, she wanted to focus more time at her home with her family and her kids because they are a very active family. And she was trying to take that every little bit of time she had to spend more time in the structure at home and with her kids and doing things at home. And in the, praise God for that, because that's what we need to be doing anyway. And, you know, here's the question. Are you going to And I want to tell you something, coaches out there. You coaches are doing a great job in many cases with these young people. And you're giving them some great skills. And I'm not knocking on that for a minute. But like to give you an example, let's just take the boys' basketball team. There's five guys on the court at a time, am I right?
Yeah.
Five guys on the court.
Uh-huh.
In any given high school, there's in a small high school, there's 250 guys. You see where I'm at with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to focus on five guys on the court and five guys on the bench. And they're, that's so important. But yet, there's so many other kids in the school. And we've got to realize they're all winners. And now, what I mean, I don't mean everybody gets a trophy and everyone gets to be a winner. That's not what I mean. What I mean is God has something special planned for each one of their lives. We are specifically and carefully created by our Creator specifically to have a life.
For a purpose.
For a purpose.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if we bring that situation back home and we start giving that foundation back, which, by the way, God instituted the family and He instituted it the way it was supposed to be. And it was supposed to be a mother and a father and a children and the things that went on. Now, granted, today we see a lot of things going on in the world and blended families and all these things. But I'm talking about the way God set up and designed the family. And when we had that family structure, then we can sit back and make decisions about, we notice our children more. You know, we have a child that leans more this way than that way. We have a child that needs attention more here than there. The biggest key is they know they're loved because they're part of a family structure and they're intricately woven together. Brothers and sisters grow up knowing each other for a lifetime and being close. You know, that's another thing in our culture today, because we're so mobile and we travel so much. You know, even in my case, I've got one sister in Grove City, Ohio. I've got one sister in Pinellas County, Florida. I've got a brother that is in Wisconsin. I have another sister that, of course, is out in Paradise, California. So you can see we're spread all over the place. And it's hard to be close, but that mobility has allowed that to happen. People have left the farms. What are we down to? Probably 3% of the people now on farms. And let's give a shout out to those farmers. They're not only feeding this country, they're feeding half the world. 3% of our population is. So let's give a shout out to them and understand the hard work that they do. But you know, it's one of those things that it doesn't matter whether you're a farmer, it doesn't matter whether you're a millwright, it doesn't matter if you're a school teacher, a biologist, a sanitation worker. Man, they get paid a little better now than they used to, don't they?
Electrician.
You know, whatever you are, you have that opportunity to be active in your home as a parent.
Yeah.
You have that opportunity to circle the wagons in your family and decide what your family design is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a plaque I have up on a wall in school. Some friends of ours gave us when we moved into our last house, and we moved it with this last move. And it's real common. You see it in homes a lot of times. It says, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And that's a pretty common thing. I hope if you have that plaque up in your house, you're living by it. But anyway, the truth is a lot of families make that decision, as for me and my house will serve the Lord. And that entails several things. And one is that we live by our biblical principles and we live by God's standard and attempt to within the best of our ability. And we interact with other Christians and we build up that family unit together. And it used to be such an active part of who we were as Christian people that there was the core of our family at home with God at the center. And then outside of that core was the core that was the church family. And it was a huge core. And we were there to help each other through hard times, to be there in times of difficulty, in times of great joy, in times of celebration, or whatever was needed. Counseling each other as families and helping with our children. I know when I was a kid, if I was going to get in trouble at a friend's house, my parents knew it right away, and I would get in trouble at a friend's house because they had no problem with that. We all were coming from the same place. But we have moved so far away from that we have become – very disconnected. We don't have with each other, and we don't. Our families aren't close. Our communities aren't close. Mm-hmm. Everybody shuts the door. Yeah. No one trusts anyone.
Right.
How dare you do this? How dare you do that?
I know growing up, we were always under the understanding that if you went to somebody else's house, they basically had full authority, just like you're, you know, if you messed up,
but
you're in trouble.
But, you know, in all fairness, there was a reason for that. It was because those families were pretty much living.
But what I'm saying is, my mom and dad, they trusted them, you know. I mean, and that's,
well, what I'm getting
and
at.
And that's what they would say. Terry messes up, by all means.
Yeah, that's
you
what
got
I'm getting
my
at.
Yeah.
Because those families were basically operating under the same standards you were, and you trusted those people because you knew where they were coming from.
Right, right.
I'll be honest with you today. I would be afraid to send my child to someone's house, and in many cases, and say, you have the full authority to do it, you know, because, I don't know where those parents are coming from anymore.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying, you know, then you knew the values of, you know.
You did.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how many times I got in trouble going to, you know, but like I say, they had full authority because, you know.
Hey, Lorna Worry never had any problem wearing her little fly swatter out on my bottom.
Me, it was a wiffle ball bat, you know.
Just, yeah. With Lorna Murray always used a fly swatter, and I got a kick out of that because my dad wasted no time. He used remember razor straps on the side of a barber chair?
Sure.
And what was really funny about that was, you know, the razor strap never really hurt because it was wide.
Uh-huh.
And we sure liked to act like it did because the last thing you wanted was that skinny black 1970s, 60s, 50s, 60s style belt.
With the big old 4-inch buckle or
No, those were the ones that was good when those came out in the 70s. Those were the ones. I'm talking about those skinny black things that are popular now.
Yeah.
But, you know, and even with all that, people say, oh, that just sounds, listen to that, sounds like such abuse. No, it wasn't. And I'll tell you why. Because it was corrective. I knew what was coming. I knew why.
Yeah.
And nothing will get your attention quicker than a swat on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Bible clearly says you spare the rod, you spoil the child. Now, it's not telling you to take a stick and beat your kid up.
No.
But what it's saying is you need to discipline.
Yeah.
And discipline shows love. And you discipline correctly. Now, and another thing, you know, you never discipline out of anger. You know, if you're going to back then, when parents would do something, it was always good for them to say, go up to your room and I'll be up there in a few minutes. Do you know why they would say that? Because they needed a few minutes to cool down to make sure that what they were doing was properly applied.
To make the right decision, you know, yeah.
And not out of frustration or anger, because that's when you could get into trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
I can honestly say that I had many swats growing up, but I was never abused once.
Right.
And even in school, when I got some pretty good swings of a paddle when I was in school. And the thing was, it was a good discipline measure because it taught them, look, this is something you don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the outcome of it. The rest of the stuff we can work around.
Right.
You know, go to your room. Oh, isn't that a big deal?
Yeah. Typically, though, you got the message after that swat. You knew not to do that again because you didn't want that swat again, you know, or whatever. And
I see these kids fighting and arguing with their parents all the time. You know,
I don't want to eat this, or, you know.
No, throwing fits in stores.
Yeah.
I got to tell you guys something. By the time I was 4 years old, all my dad had to do was look at me, and I knew exactly what he was thinking. And it solved so much hassle in our family. You know, when you discipline early, and I'm not talking about beating your kids, so don't say Pastor said that. But when you discipline early and you discipline correctly.
It's called the look. All you had to get was the look.
You save so much trouble because the time before these kids ever get to school, the age to go to school, they know that when dad or mom says stop it, they mean stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not none of this, I'm going to count to five.
Right.
Well, guess what? I never got past two.
What was that? Yeah.
What was that? And quite frankly, it was, I grew up, like I said, knowing my parents loved me, and they did. And we really got caught up in a lot of odd socialization in our teaching and things that happened over the last 50 years that have really, we're not the same society. And I have to tell you, you dare argue with me out there that we're a worse society. We're not a better society. I don't remember young people continually committing suicide. I don't remember the amount of abuse and the level that it is and domestic violence. I mean, we have a very high rate of first responders in this country committing suicide. And the reason they're doing it is because they can't handle the mental anguish of what they're seeing every day on the street. The amount of domestic violence and child abuse and stuff has skyrocketed. Now, they wanted to call discipline corporal punishment that 40 years ago, but I didn't see those evidences of that stuff back then. Sure, it went on. In society, you're always going to have the worst out there. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a constant that we see constantly. You know, yes, there were marriages where the husband ruled with an iron fist and the wife was some meek little thing that got abused. But if you tell me there's no abuse in the house today, we are at an all-time high on marital abuse. So what are we doing wrong? You know, we're trying all these things, and no one's coming back to where they need to be. You know, we're not in church. And that's another huge one. When families were in church, other families would recognize problems starting to arise many times. And the men would pull dad aside, or mama, the women mom aside, what's going on, you know? How can we intervene and help this situation? You know, you need some counseling over here. Let's go, buddy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we're not getting that. We're just out there in the world. We put on our mask every day. We get out of bed, and we put on this mask that we want the world to see. And we got into society, and we put on this charade for the whole day and do our job. And we come home, take our mask off, and be someone that we're not. And or be our real self, which is really sad sometimes. It really is. And I know this isn't across the board. There's happy people out there. There's great functional families that do everything with their kids, and they do athletics with their kids. You know who those families usually are, though? They're usually the coaches, because that's their life anyway. Mm-hmm. So their kids are active. Sure they are, because they got to be at school anyway, or they're a teacher and a coach. So they're with them all the time. But you take the general family out there, that the parents are trying to work two jobs and they're running kids everywhere. Folks, I got to tell you, there's a lot of dysfunction out there, and there's a lot of anger, and there's a lot of arguing, and there's a lot of stress and worn out people. And we've got to get back to being families again. I firmly believe that. You know, the destruction of the American family is going to be the destruction of America. And we're already seeing it. We're seeing it everywhere. It's such a sad thing. You know, we have so many grandparents raising kids right now. In our church, I've got grandparents raising kids. And they've raised their kids. But they love their grandkids, so they're raising their grandkids because their kids have kind of walked away from the deal, and society told them to chase their dream, whatever that is, or, you know, I don't need these kids anymore. Or we have parents that can't wait to get the kids out of the house so they can go back to doing their thing. Mm. And whatever happened to that family that was intricately wound together like a basket?
Yeah. And then the burden of that, of course, falls on the grandparents. And like you said, the grandparents have already went through 18, 20 years of their lives, you know.
Or longer, because
or longer,
if they had five or six kids over a period of 15 years, they've gone through 30, 40 years of it. And now they're being asked it at 40, 50 years old to start all over again.
Yeah.
And they're doing it, and it's killing them.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, kids out there, if you're in that situation,
now,
thank God you have grandparents that love you and are doing it. Because I don't know what would happen otherwise.
Well, you know, I mean, of course, and I don't know where this falls in the line of thing, but the number one thing, a lot of times, I think, is from a financial standpoint. You know, grandparents are on that income to where they only have X amount of, you know, and now you're asking two or three more people, depending upon how many kids they have, to basically live off that amount of money that they've, you know, and I mean, it's tough for them, I'm sure, you know, and...
You know, and a huge part, to be honest with you, another something is happening, and it needs to happen. I mean, the grandparents don't have the money, but when they are awarded custody, then, you know, they can get an ADC type thing, or they get funding through the state to help them raise those children.
Right.
Well, there's another huge pull on our economy where there's nothing going in and there's more coming out.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see that too constantly.
Sure.
I believe me, I am not saying take any money away from those people raising those kids.
No.
What I'm saying is the whole system's out of whack, and our families are out of whack. And young people, I got to tell you something out there. If you're a young adult and you're thinking of you know, going off and chasing your dream, and you have young people there, you've got a responsibility first, and you better learn to love them.
Yeah.
It amazes me that people don't want to have that. Maybe they do want to have that closeness at home. They just are pulled in so many directions. And one parent wants this, another wants that, and then they're divorced, and you know, one child goes there, and what happens to this house, they come back, and we try this, but then dad lets them do this, and mom lets them do this. I got a real good cure for that. You know what that cure is? It's called mom and dad decide that you're going to be the best spouse that you can ever, ever be, and don't get a divorce. Make sure your spouse is the most important person in your life. And if they're not, pray to God they become that way. And you start deciding. Make it, you know, marriage is a covenant contract between you, your spouse, and God. It's not something that, oh, I'm in love today and I feel good, so I'm going to marry this person. And by the way, if it doesn't work out, we'll just kick each other to the curb and go our own ways. That's not what it is. Marriage is a covenant decision. And when you make that covenant decision, you make it work, because you better make it work or it's going to be real miserable. And if you look at why was it that so many marriages in the past, in years past, many were arranged, actually. Or you were in some small town where there was five girls and five boys, and your options just went out the window.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to pick from one of the, you know, and you may get the leftovers.
Sure.
But the point is that if you both made a decision that you were going to, this is my spouse, you know, I don't know I love them, but I'm committed to them, but I need to learn to love them, and I need to care about them, and they need to care about you, that love develops. And then you see these people have been married 60, 70 years, and one spouse dies, and I saw this happen in the Ed Wasserbeck's parents just a couple years ago, wonderful older couple, and they died literally within hours of each other. I mean, because they loved each other that deeply and were part of each other. And that's the whole point. See, a real marriage grows. Infatuation dies. You know, if sex is the center of what holds you together, trust me, that person is going to get real ugly in time. Because it can't be what holds you together.
Right.
And or someone else is going to spark that interest eventually. But when you decide that, you know, this is the family that I have, this is the person, and I'm going to make this work, I'm going to make them happy. And they go, well, I don't want to make them happy. They don't make me happy. No, that's not the whole point. The whole point is you both have to sit down, look at each other, and make that decision that we're here for each other through thick and thin. And then that person will definitely, in a positive way, grow on you. And you will become not just a friend, but they'll become a lover. And then your kids see how that's supposed to work. And if they can see how that marriage is supposed to work, when they become adults, they say, you know what, that's what I want for me. And this is what we used to have in society that we don't have today. There's always been dysfunctional families. There always will be. Someone's always going to point out, well, yeah, but this, well, yeah, it is. It's not everything is an absolute, but I'm going to tell you something. Let's play odds here. Your odds are going to be on the high side that things are going to go well, rather than just going out and going by feelings on everything.
Right.
See, it's part of the problem. Excuse me. I did that on the show Friday. All right, in the middle of the show, I had to sneeze. But anyway, excuse me. You know, the problem is that with so much of what we do today, just like with the baking contest on the Food Network channel, and just like with the sports and everything else that we do, everything is a contest that involves great emotion. And when you do really well and you win, you got this elated emotion. And that's what life's all about, grabbing that gusto. What happens when the emotion goes away? And see, we're doing that in our homes. We're doing that in our marriages. What happens when the emotion goes away? You know, I will be married in a couple of weeks. I will have been married 41 years, which is pretty good, long time. We got married. We were I think she had turned 20, but I was still a teenager. Anyway, I think Shirley turned 20. But what I'm getting at is this. It's been a roller coaster. There have been times that it has been, oh, my word, what drudgery. You know, I'm sure she's got out of bed some mornings and said, what am I doing with him? And there's other mornings, maybe a month later, she's woke up and looked at me and said, what would I do without him? And it's the same way. It's what marriages are. There's peaks and valleys. And you work through the valleys and you rejoice in the peaks because you know the valleys are coming again. And the more you work through them and the more you care, the less of those valleys there's going to be because you get out of them quicker.
Yeah.
You recognize them and desire to be out. You start to not have to be the one that's right all the time.
Right.
Or learn that something's really not worth arguing about. You care about each other too much to be mad at each other all the time. Right. See, I don't like going to bed with my wife mad at me. Mm-hmm. It bothers me. I have trouble going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that. I don't have to be right to prove a point. I don't have to have the boys' night out. You know, that's another marriage killer. Folks, I got to tell you out there, the boys' night out and the girls' night out causes more divorce than you can ever imagine. Because, you know, you go out with three of your friends, three out of the four are divorced, and you're having trouble at home, and they're going to suck you right into it and say, you know what, you need to dump that bum.
That same story, I had a lady share that same story with me at work. Her and her husband, about the same length of time that you, about 42, 43 years they've been married. The guy had just retired. She had a couple more years to work, and it happened.
What happened, though?
Well, they went out. You know, they had like a guy's night out. You know,
yep,
I mean,
this
took place in the summer because they were done golfing. And here's where the story, you're not going to believe this part of the story, but there was a young lady there that this guy, for some reason, happened to get involved with this young lady through 43 years of marriage down the drain.
Oh, sure. It happens every day. I guess he was trying to recapture his manhood.
Exactly.
The problem is, that's not a man. A man stays with his wife.
And then now, of course, everything that they'd worked for, that he'd worked, you know, to have, gone.
See, we've kind of lost touch about what a man and a woman is today anyway. A man is someone that puts his family first. A man is someone that loves his wife beyond measure and will always, always want to do what's right and best for her. And a woman is someone that is special and is that is meant to be special and loves her children and loves her husband. And we've traded that in for let's chase our dreams. Well, what are your dreams? You know, are your dreams what they're supposed to be? Are you going to be happy when those dreams are over? I've talked to more older people that have said, boy, I mean, I sure made a mistake. You know, I should have, you know, my first marriage, you know, we should have worked it out. You know how many times I hear that? We should have worked it out. We should have worked, not just for us, but for the kids. And I've seen older people that have gotten remarried after they've been divorced for 20, 30 years because they both just really messed up. You know, the thing is,
it's the old adage. What's the old adage? The grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Well, you think it is.
Right.
Till you get over there and it's the same stinking color.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or what's the other one? Jump from the frying pan into the skillet?
You got it.
You know, and that happens too. But you know, the thing, work on your marriage at home. Stop this stuff. Yeah. And what I say about going out, though, you know, there's nothing wrong with having fun with friends.
99.9% of the time, the things that you are can be worked out easily. But either you choose to or you choose not to, I think. You know.
My mom, I remember the ladies in the morning, most of them, some of them worked. One lady was a nurse and she worked night shift and she always come over for coffee before she went home and went to bed. And but a couple of the other ladies didn't have jobs and they were stay-at-home moms. And they would come over to my house. I'd see this in the summertime. And they'd come over to have coffee in the morning, and they'd talk and maybe have a Bible study or pray together, and they'd laugh and talk about the silly stuff that each other's did and their husbands did. But here's the point. When one of them was having a problem, they sat and they discussed it, and they discussed what was the proper way to handle it, to keep the marriage strong. You see the difference? There's nothing wrong with having friends. There's nothing. But, you know, men, I'd encourage the same thing, you know. Don't be hanging around a bunch of men that like to strut around and make themselves look like they're King Kong. And, you know, get in there and find men. Find me. If you got men friends, they better be men that love their wives, and that's all they want to do. And that they love their families, and they do want to have solid families. They take to church and do those things. It's so important. You know, I see another thing I want to say before I get off the air that just blows me away that I see today. And Terry, for the life of me, I don't understand this. One of the huge shifts we've had in our culture today is men used to see themselves as the provider, as the caregiver. They used to see themselves as the protector. Mm-hmm. And now I'm seeing more and more young women that are out there working one and two jobs, three jobs, whatever, to take care of the kids. And they've got this guy at home, and the only thing he sees himself as is macho man.
Yeah.
He takes care of the sexual side of things, and that's all he's got to do.
Video games.
And yeah, I don't get it. And they don't make this guy work.
Yeah.
And they're letting him get away with it. Ladies, please. You know, that man is supposed to be supporting there. You know, I'm not telling anybody to get a divorce, but for crying out loud, if you're not married to the guy, kick the bum to the curb. Find someone that's going to take care of you and love your family. You know, that guy's doing you no good, but he's doing is using you and belittling you more and more and more every day.
He's making you struggle.
He's making you struggle, and the kids are getting a horrible example of what a real man is. And, you know, if it's your husband, you guys got some work to do. If he's not your husband, he shouldn't be there anyway. Kick him to the curb.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but
yeah,
that's...
Yeah.
Hey, God bless you guys. It's been a great day. The opinionated Pastor Steve Whitaker here, I guess, huh? You know, I'll be honest with you. I hope some of this stuff's good stuff.
Yeah.
And I hope you want to plug into it. You know, I'll be back here again Friday morning for Over the Fence.
And if they need any help with this stuff, call you.
Yeah, call me, 740-494-2222. Leave a message. I promise you I'll call you back. I always do. But
you check them every day, right?
Absolutely, every day.
Yeah.
And I'll be glad to talk to you. But no, you know, really, it's a the show's great. I enjoy the show. We'll play this again tomorrow at what time? 3:15.
3:15.
3:15. Yeah. It'll come on.
Yeah.
And then we'll see you at the pastor spot on Friday morning. So God bless you guys, and take care.
Have a good night, guys.
You're listening.